You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Tuesday, February 7, 2023. The Contenders, Part 2. To survive DOE's hydrogen hub cutdown, certain factors may prove critical. Published by Paige Hambrick. The U.S. is gearing up to provide billions of dollars in financial support for a series of regional clean hydrogen hubs and had what amounts to an informal cutdown at the end of December, announcing that 33 project proponents had been formally encouraged to submit a full application this spring. Although the Department of Energy, DOE, didn't name any of the projects on the encouraged list, we've been able to identify many of the proposals, and add five more in today's blog, even though a lot of project details remain under wraps. In today's RBN blog, we'll look at the new projects on our list and examine the major factors that are likely to influence a project's viability. As we noted in part one of this blog series, the U.S. has made clean hydrogen a priority, with the federal government's Regional Clean Hydrogen Hubs, or H2 Hubs, program intended to accelerate the process. The DOE opened up $7 billion in funding, courtesy of 2021's Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, in September 2022 for the development of 6 to 10 hubs. For the first stage of the process, the DOE's Office of Clean Energy Demonstration, or OCED, which will administer the hydrogen hub funding, required interested parties to submit concept papers about their planned projects. The OCED is also managing the development of hubs built around direct air capture, or DAC, which we wrote about in Stuck in the Middle with You, Part 2. Clean hydrogen is hydrogen that is produced with low net lifetime greenhouse gas, or GHG, emissions. Generally, it is produced either by running water through nuclear or renewables-powered electrolyzers or by running natural gas through SMRs or ATRs, steam methane reformers and autothermal reformers, respectively, and capturing and sequestering most of the resulting carbon dioxide, or CO2. To catch the latest developments and project announcements, check our weekly hydrogen billboard. A clean hydrogen hub, then, is a network of clean hydrogen producers, potential clean hydrogen consumers, and connective infrastructure located in close proximity. There were five key criteria for hub projects: geographic diversity, end use diversity, feedstock diversity, hubs in natural gas production areas, and employment, so we can see how well the proposals we know about fit the stated criteria and how they match our previous expectations about which ones would have the best chances. And as we'll get to shortly, the planned implementation of the various projects to achieve those criteria will be critical in determining their success. Of the 79 concept papers that were submitted in November, 33 were encouraged by a DOE panel to submit a full application by the April 7th deadline. Each paper's assessment was based on evaluation criteria that included qualifications, experience and capabilities, expected contributions toward a national hydrogen network, plans to develop production and use, and connected facilities and community benefits. As noted earlier, the OCED announcement didn't name those projects, but we have been able to confirm 23 of them through various methods, including press releases and other news coverage. Since our initial blog ran, we've added five projects to our list. One is the Mid-Atlantic Clean Hydrogen Hub, also known as MACH 2. The proposal, which focuses on southeastern Pennsylvania, Delaware, and southern New Jersey, aims to leverage existing technology and infrastructure strengths to generate clean hydrogen and revitalize existing pipeline infrastructure. Backers of the proposal say that more than 25 industry, academic, and supply chain partners have expressed an interest in the hub. Another project that received positive DOE feedback was one by an Indiana coalition that includes the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, Cummins Incorporated, Purdue University, BP, and the Nonprofit Energy Systems Network. The proposal focuses on heavily industrialized Northwest Indiana and has several elements that would seem to work in its favor, either on its own or merged into one of the other Midwest-focused projects. The region is home to BP's Whiting Refinery, significant steel production, including the U.S. steel plant in Gary, and a heavy concentration of truck traffic that could be a potential market for hydrogen conversion. The area also has access to the Great Lakes and beyond through the nearby port of Indiana. The next three projects on our list are all in the Great Plains. The Kansas-based Hydrogen Hub Coalition is an alliance of public and private entities, including Black & Veatch, Evergy NextEra Energy, and Enel Green Power. Its plan is based on leveraging the state's low wholesale electricity costs and investments in renewable power, along with its location in the central U.S., strong transportation infrastructure, robust agricultural and industrial sectors, and underground storage potential. Details are scarce about the nearby Mid-Continent Clean Hydrogen Hub, which combines elements in Iowa, Missouri, and Nebraska. A fifth project we can add to our list is the Heartland Hydrogen Hub, which is centered on a partnership between Bakken Energy and BNSF Railway, which could utilize clean hydrogen produced from natural gas across its rail network, which covers much of the U.S. west of Chicago. Planning began with a 2021 agreement between North Dakota-based clean hydrogen producer Bakken Energy and Mitsubishi Power Americas to develop a hydrogen hub in the state. North Dakota, along with its neighbors Minnesota, Montana, and Wisconsin, agreed in October 2022 to work with Bakken Energy and BNSF on the hydrogen hub proposal. BNSF also signed a Memorandum of Understanding with Cummins Incorporated and Schneider Carriers Incorporated to work on incorporating the needs of long-haul trucking into the hub proposal. We know of a few other projects that might be on the DOE's encouraged list, although they remain unconfirmed. But why haven't we heard about all of them at this point? The likely answer is competitiveness. With 2 months to go until full applications are due, some project backers may not see a benefit in having the basic outlines of a proposal out in public, especially with billions in potential funding on the line. It's important to remember that most of the 79 concept papers that were submitted were not made available to the public. It's also possible that some hub plans are still being worked out. There was a 20-page limit on concept papers, while a full application could be several times as long, with up to 100 pages allowed for just a plan's technical details, which covers everything from business development and management to a detailed work plan. Also, there are lots of pieces to the individual proposals, many of which have not been detailed in public, and several of them include multiple states. Some other projects could be maintaining their silence because they are being combined into a single application to increase their odds of success, something the DOE has actively encouraged. To foster greater collaboration on hydrogen hub projects, the DOE launched what it calls H2 Matchmaker, an online resource intended to help facilitate regional hub development by allowing hydrogen producers, end users, and other stakeholders to self-identify and align potential needs in specific areas within the U.S. But while aggregating a multitude of parties may increase scope, as well as the potential for funding matching, it also adds to the complexity of integrating so many interested parties from the outset of what will need to be sophisticated markets. Now that we can identify more than two-thirds of the projects encouraged to submit a full application, let's look at what might enable them to take the next step. The DOE wants to build these regional hubs as a way to expand hydrogen's reach, so the biggest feather in any project's cap is likely to be its potential to significantly impact the development of a national network while also being able to produce hydrogen at a commercial scale. According to the DOE, the U.S. currently produces about 10 million tons per annum of hydrogen, with global production at about 90 million tons per annum. Virtually all of that production is done via SMR without capturing the emissions, colloquially referred to as gray hydrogen. The U.S.'s National Clean Hydrogen Strategy and Roadmap puts U.S. production of clean hydrogen at 10 million tons per annum by 2030 and 50 million tons per annum by 2050. The Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, has been seen by many as a game-changer in terms of creating a strong supply-side incentive for the production of hydrogen and other alternative fuels, but the demand-side incentives in the legislation are not as pronounced. Given that scenario, a hub project that fully incorporates upstream, midstream, and downstream considerations is likely to have a strong case to survive the DOE's next cutdown. In the midstream, pipeline access will be a tremendous advantage. The most extensive existing hydrogen developments in the U.S. have access to hydrogen and CO2 pipeline networks, so hub proposals with connections to one or both would likely have a leg up on the competition. As we noted in Part 1, that's part of why we've always thought the Texas-Louisiana coast was a natural choice for a hydrogen hub, see our Gulf Coast Highway series. A final factor that shouldn't be underestimated is environmental justice, especially in areas where that has been a long-standing issue. The White House's Justice 40 initiative pledges that at least 40% of overall benefits from federal investments in climate and clean energy will be delivered to disadvantaged communities. Many of the DOE's hydrogen programs moving forward, including the regional hubs, are included in the Justice 40 initiative. Given the vast amounts of government largesse available in the hub competition, the entire effort is going to generate a tremendous amount of oversight and scrutiny. That means projects that don't appear to be on very solid footing are going to have a hard time winning final approval. Democrats will especially want to avoid any comparisons to the Obama administration's missteps with Solyndra. The solar panel startup received $535 million in federal loans made available under 2009's American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA, but the company misled the DOE in its application and filed for bankruptcy about 2.5 years after receiving the loans. it was a black eye for the Obama administration and political fodder for Republicans for years. We should also note that the federal government's support for the development of a clean hydrogen industry doesn't begin and end with its hydrogen hub money. In fact, it could be argued that the primary drivers behind the private sector's efforts to build production facilities and other hydrogen-related assets are 1. A new clean hydrogen production tax credit, PTC, and 2. An expansion of the existing investment tax credit, or ITC, for energy projects to include hydrogen-related projects, both of which are in the IRA. The PTC, also known as a Section 45 volts tax credit, applies to the first 10 years of production from a qualified clean hydrogen facility and provides a tax credit equal to 60 cents/kg of clean hydrogen produced times a factor of between 0.2 and 1, depending on the life cycle GHGs generated by the project. That credit is then multiplied by 5 if the project's developer pays prevailing wages, generally meaning union-scale wages, and offers a qualifying apprenticeship program for construction, maintenance, and repair work. The ITC, in turn, provides a tax credit for the energy portion of the project's cost basis. We'll be looking for news about additional hub proposals as we get closer to the April 7th deadline to submit a full application, but that's only the next step in the process. The DOE is expected to trim the list of potential hubs down to 8 to 12 after the full applications are submitted, with the winners expected to be notified sometime around the fall of 2023 and award negotiations completed in the winter of 2023 to 2024. Most of the selected proposals are likely to receive between $500 million and $1 billion in federal support, depending on each project's size and need and how many hub sites are ultimately selected. The Contenders was written by Ray Davis and appears as the first song on side one of the Kinks' 8th studio album, Lola vs. Powerman and the Money Go Round, Part 1. The song features a memorable slide guitar hook from Dave Davis and great blues harp from Ray Davis. Personnel on the record were Ray Davis on lead vocals, rhythm guitar, and resonator guitar, Dave Davis on lead guitar, slide guitar, banjo, and backing vocals, John Dalton on bass and backing vocals, Mick Avery on drums and percussion, and John Gosling on piano. Lola vs. Powerman and the Money Go Round, Part 1, was recorded between April and September 1970 at Morgan Studio in London with Ray Davis producing. Released in November 1970, the album went to number 35 on the Billboard 200 albums chart. The concept album offered a satirical look at the music industry. Hunter Thompson once said that the music industry is a cruel and shallow money trench, a long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. There's also a negative side. That pretty much sums up Ray Davis's take on managers, song publishers, unions, the press, and life on the road reflected in the songs on the LP. Two singles, including the top 10 hit Lola, were released from the album. The Kinks were an English rock band formed in London by brothers Ray and Dave Davis. 12 members have passed through the band, with Ray and Dave Davis being the only original members in the band during the Kinks' entire 33-year run. They released 24 studio albums, 6 live albums, 32 compilation albums, 10 EPs, and 78 singles. They are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the UK Music Hall of Fame. The band gave its last public performance in 1996, and officially broke up in 1997 due to creative tension between Ray and Dave Davis. Both brothers have gone on to successful solo careers recording and touring.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.